Coming up on podcast 1229, the BMW iX first drives are in. All pretty good. Stick around, I'll tell you more. Also on the podcast today, we look at the Genesis GV60, the Neo battery swapping coming to Norway, and the German state where Gigafactory Berlin's being built. With some good, maybe bad news, you decide. Stick around, that's on the way. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening in the world. Welcome to EV News Daily for what happened on Thursday, 30th of September. It's Martin here, been through every EV story to just let you know what you need to know about, really. And today was the day the embargo lifted on the BMW iX first drives. A bunch of journalists, Jason from Jalopnik, my buddy Tom Malogny from Inside EVs, were flown to Munich by BMW to drive a bunch of stuff, hydrogen stuff and things they were really trying to tell the journalists about. But the i4 was in there and the iX as well. Those are the cars we're super interested about. And as part of their seven-day press trip of having to sit through a few lectures of how hydrogen will work, they also got to drive some cars as well. And then 10 o'clock on Thursday morning, by the look of it, all the embargoes were lifted, and so we can now tell you about the BMW iX. And I've been texting Tom about this as well, and it's a car he's super impressed with. It's one of two new EVs coming to the US next year, but the upcoming i4 is pretty much a 4 Series Grand Coupe, but with electric bits and bobs underneath. The iX, meanwhile, is start with a clean sheet of paper, or, you know, computer screen, as I should say, from the ground up design, unlike anything else in BMW's portfolio, and will continue to be, because just like the i3, this, as I gather, is a one-off platform, which makes no sense to me, but BMW, I presume, know what they're doing. Surely you build a platform like VW with the MEB, which involves all of your brands, and then you run hundreds of cars off of it, and you make enormous cost savings, and I don't know. Anyway, that's what I understand, that once this car is done, that's all they'll use this this platform for. According to Roadshow, it all starts with a composite space frame, carbon fiber reinforced plastic, aluminium and high strength steel. And if it all sounds familiar, yes, we've been talking about that technology on the i3, which was space age when it was launched and still is, and the i8 as well. And just like those cars, the iX's body structure is super light and super strong. Hard to get a sense of how big the iX is if you look at the photos, but it's, let me say, BMW X5. I think most people listening to this podcast will have at least seen an X5 on the road, if you don't know it intimately, at least. A little shorter in height is the iX. It comes with 20-inch wheels. 21s and 22s are optional, and as with all of these big SUVs, in order to kind of make them look in proportion, you really have got to spec the at least 21-inch, but probably 22-inch wheels as well, and just live with, well, maybe the air suspension having a bit more of a workout to keep the ride comfortable, and probably a few extra punctures along the way as well, depending on how low profile you go on the tyres. But, you know, it's, these cars don't look good with tiny wheels and tyres on. Having a dedicated EV platform, though, does mean it can be a proper EV. Yes, sing hallelujah, sing hallelujah. It's lighter than converting a traditional architecture over to an EV and stuffing batteries places. The structural points, the package requirements, the design, all about starting with the battery pack, the motors, where you put them on the axles, where you put the powertrain equipment, and you don't waste any space in the chassis. And you can engineer that chassis to have the characteristics that you want based around the unique characteristics of having this big, strong lump of weight along the bottom of the car. Well, BMW blog point out that the completely flat rear trunk floor in the iX is possible because it doesn't have a transmission tunnel to work around. The battery can be stored flat underneath the floor, and the battery is packaged better, and rear passengers have more foot room. And because the rear subframes and suspension are designed for EV motors, the entire eDrive unit is under the rear trunk floor with no intrusion into any cargo space. I'll pop a link to BMW blog in the show notes. They had a great article on this, by the way. Well, the high-voltage battery pack has made similar gains in terms of the increased energy density, about 40% compared to the battery in the outgoing i3, the chemistry used in that. BMW sources saying they use prismatic cells from the likes of CATL and Samsung SDI. Prismatic cells are basically like little bricks, if you like. Well, quite big bricks, like a couple of VHS cassettes stacked together, almost. BMW sources also saying that the rest is done in their in-house battery facility in the Dingolfing factory. So CATL and Samsung supply, but they put them together, they put them into modules, and they build them into battery packs. And BMW saying the way that they've built it is intentionally serviceable. Yes, you can take a module out of a Tesla. Yes, it is fabulously difficult to do. Yes, people have done it. And yes, people have found out over the years that whilst you can do that and you can change out, you can swap out modules in Teslas, if you do it in these third-party places that we need to have, right to repair, etc., it's not just swapping out a battery. There's trying to match them with the cells that are already in the car. I won't go into it now, but either way, BMW saying they've designed it around servicing, longevity of the vehicle. If for any reason there is a problem with the cell or a module, it is much more serviceable than other EVs out there. It uses a 106.3 kilowatt hour pack, which is usable. Now, gross is 111.5. So we're looking at about a 5 kilowatt hour buffer. And when I say buffer, if you're new to the podcast, why don't they just give you all of the battery that's in it? They reserve a little bit at the top and the bottom, not necessarily equally, so that you can't charge your EV all the way, because just the way that cell chemistry goes, whether it is your car or other consumer goods that you use, lithium-ion batteries do not like to be charged up to their maximum voltage and then left for weeks on end on your driveway, not driving anywhere. So car makers protect the batteries a little bit, not all of them do, but some of them, so that you can't do unintentional damage to the battery. Just working around the technology that we have at the moment. And again, at the bottom as well. So you don't drive your car all the way down to 0 miles and then just leave it for 3 months. Because again, very detrimental to the chemistry inside the battery. So that's what we talk about, the buffer. You don't get to use all of that voltage. 6 modules of 50 cells each, and another 5 modules with 40 cells, according to Ars Technica. Since leaving the factory, they say, about 1,200 miles ago, this journalist says that I drove the iX and was testing on average 2.8 miles per kilowatt hour. Okay, now anyone that's driven an EV will hear that and shudder. Now I tend to, if I'm driving an EV, I kind of have a mental benchmark of if I'm at 4 miles per kilowatt hour, that's pretty good. You're driving an EV that'll do more than 4, and there are some of the South Korean cars will do way more than 4, then you're doing pretty well. Anything less, not the end of the world. If it's in the late 3s, that's okay, but around 4 miles per kilowatt hour. So this BMW getting 2.8, surely that's a terrible result. But this journalist also writes later in the article, I was driving flat out on de-restricted German autobahns at 124 miles an hour, which is 200 kilometers an hour. That is going to absolutely kill your efficiency. So if you are going to do that, if you can do anything apart from a 70 mile an hour range test, which is the standard range test as set by the likes of Inside EVs and Kyle and Tom, etc., then if you're just going to absolutely cane it, you cannot look at that efficiency figure. It means nothing. No one drives those speeds and expects to get anything reasonable in terms of efficiency, combustion or electric. Well, what about when you want to recharge it? The BMW iX will recharge at 195 kilowatts peak. They say 40 minutes to get to 80%, but as is always the case, I'll say it again, said it before, it's all about the charge curve. There is no point peaking at 195 and then 2 seconds later going down to 50 kilowatts, you know, but if it can take that, it's like an Audi e-tron, if it can take a fast charge all the way through to pretty late in the charging curve, well then that's what you want. I don't think that's going to be the case though with a 40 minute charge to get to 80%. That's 10 to 80 as well, not 0 to 80. So can't wait for, you know, real EV journalists to get hold of it, plug it in, test it, get it nice and warm, run it down to zero, plug it in, test it, etc. AC charging, by the way, in case you're wondering, 11 kilowatts. Now, the car does have 516 horsepower, 0 to 62 miles an hour, that's 0 to 100 kilometers an hour, 4.6 seconds, which will feel rapid in a vehicle this big. 300 miles of range is ballpark figure. Probably EPA will be somewhere just over 300. WLTP is, I've forgotten, didn't write it in my notes, 350-odd, maybe more than that, actually. The front bonnet, by the way, doesn't lift up. Now, there is a BMW badge, and that does lift up, says Jalopnik, and if you want to store something underneath the BMW badge, well, maybe you could have a solitary meatball wrapped in there in a napkin. But otherwise, the BMW badge lifts up because that's where you fill the washer fluid reservoir. You actually can't lift the bonnet. Because, well, you can, but you need two people, two separate latches, specialised tools that you won't be able to buy them. So there is no stays to keep it open. There's no hinged sticks to hold the bonnet open. There are no user serviceable parts inside. They do not want you going underneath it. And if the hood does come off, it's going to come off in a service centre, in a garage, and it'll be lifted off and, I don't know, lent against the side of the workshop wall or something, because it is not designed to be lifted up and to get any oily parts on your fingers. I mean, there's nothing under there that's serviceable. Jason at Jalopnik did say there was a cutaway they had on show, which is, you know, when they sort of, you know, you get auto shows and stuff, and they cut the bonnet away. He spent a long time staring at how much room was inside that front compartment and said, seriously, if that was packaged tighter, you could get a front trunk, which is great for charging cables. Well, why not just put them in the back? Well, if your boot is full of, I don't know, just your stuff, kids' pushchair, junk, whatever, and you keep your charging cables underneath the floor of the boot, you've got to unload your car before you charge it on at least a level two, unless you're, you know, on a tethered DC fast charging connection. So that's why frunks are great. Can we live them out? Can we live without them? Of course, if you can possibly get some storage up front for cables, you know, the occasional smelly takeaway when you're driving home, not to stink out the cabin, absolutely brilliant. But even though there's room, they haven't gone with one in there. Jalopnik says the wheels have been designed to be aerodynamic and quiet at high speed. Unsurprisingly, this is a German car designed at least to keep the Autobahn drivers happy. But it's an EV that is fully soundproofed and very, very quiet inside, so it will play you artificial sounds, designed by the likes of Hans Zimmer, the musician. And they said it was very good, actually. I've seen multiple bits of feedback saying that normally these artificial sounds in EVs are utterly terrible, and they're actually really good. So looking forward to experiencing that myself. The active driving assist is meant to be pretty good, particularly adaptive cruise control, so the radar's looking a long way down the road, and if there is a red light, rather than just, you know, carrying on at 70 miles an hour and then slamming on the brakes as some adaptive cruise doesn't look far enough ahead. Apparently it is. It's very intelligent in thinking, right, so I need to come down to a full stop in, you know, I don't know, X many hundred meters. So I'll start to cruise now and I'll get regen and then absolutely time it perfectly. That's meant to be very, very good. Software's going to be updated bi-weekly, by the way, which I presume means once every 2 weeks. That is all to do with the nav and things like location of charging points as well. As many of those, I'll say, non-Tesla EV makers have to get this right. That's one of the best experiences of driving a Tesla. You just punch in where you want to charge and where you're going, and it's all in the map and all the live data is there. And if you are any car maker, you've got to start integrating this much, much better with third-party charging systems and getting that live data in. That will be updated by BMW. They're taking it very seriously. Right, what do you reckon of the new BMW iX, the X5 kind of competitor and Model X competitor, e-tron competitor, iPace competitor? Let me know in the comments or email me. I want to know what you think about cars like this. All right, coming up soon, we'll talk about the Mustang Mach-E getting more range and Neo's battery swapping. So, Genesis are next in the news today, and the Genesis GV60 is their first dedicated electric vehicle from Hyundai, Kia, Genesis, and it's going to have rear and all-wheel drive layouts. It'll do 0 to 62 miles an hour in 4 seconds thanks to a boost mode. I'm not particularly keen on these boost modes that give you 8 or 10 seconds of extra power. It just kind of, you don't know, it feels like a bit of a bait and switch, because they give you that headline title or time of, hey, 4 seconds, 0 to 60, and then, well, you know, you can't do that repeatedly, you can't maintain these high speeds and boost modes. It's something very artificial about that, but, like, you know, combustion cars have had it as well, so I shouldn't really complain. Automotive News saying that the Genesis has a standard rear-wheel drive system on 168 kilowatt-hour motor, plenty powerful for most people. All-wheel drive variant gets two motors, and the rear-wheel motor delivering 160 on top of the front delivering 74, so that's 234 kilowatts total power. Again, lots for most people. And the performance model is all-wheel drive, 320 kilowatts of power, topping out at 360 in a short-lived boost mode. All versions get the 77.4 kilowatt-hour battery pack. Now, that is the same size battery pack as we see in the likes of the Kia EV6. I do see other journalists saying, oh, they're using the same battery pack just because it's the same number. That doesn't mean it's the same battery pack. It could be, it just happens to be the same size. I wouldn't be surprised. I mean, it's all from the same family, but, you know, the Kia Genesis, the Genesis Hyundai engineers are all working on different things. So, hey, it's the same size. Doesn't mean it's the same pack, but it could well be. They've added battery conditioning so that when you're navigating to a DC fast charger, it will get the battery in optimal condition. That is good. A good thing to, it's not, you don't see that on too many EVs, that's a good thing. 800 volt architecture, of course, and it's coming in the first half of 2022, so, you know, let's be pessimistic, end of June. If it's sooner, we'll be surprised. We like that. Next, we'll talk about the Ford Mustang Mach-E getting more usable battery range. Some notable changes for the new model year in 2022. And as we've been talking about recently on this podcast, thanks to Inside EVs getting a few tips, we now know the biggest change for the Ford Mustang Mach-E will be the standard range going from 70 kilowatt hours usable, I should say, up from 68, and the extended range from 88 to 91. Again, not massive changes, but a few extra kilowatt hours, a few extra miles, we like that. California Route 1 model is going to be available in all-wheel drive with heated seats up front, heated steering wheel for the 2022 model year. Mustang Mach-E continues to improve, and that is a good thing, some would say it needed to. You know, rub off some rough edges of when it first launched. NIO are next in the news, launching the ES8 and battery swapping in Norway. The smart electric flagship SUV, the NIO ES8, went on sale today, alongside the launch of NIO House Oslo, the first NIO house in Europe. An important part of their experience is the charging and the battery swapping system for NIO. They really believe in that as well, and they're going to test out the theory in Europe. Works very well in China, as we'll come on to in just a few moments. 3 minutes to swap a battery. That's so quick. 3 minutes and a fully charged 100 kilowatt hour pack is yours, and off you go. Goodness me. Norwegian authorities have approved the first power swap station. It's going to be located 30 kilometres south of Oslo, and they're going to have 20 of these in Norway by the end of next year. The plan is to put power swap stations in the main cities and along busy transport routes, subject to getting the right approvals for planning. And NIO also offering battery as a service in Norway as well. So battery lease, if you like. Call it that, but they call it battery as a service. It's rental, isn't it? It's leasing your battery pack. It just takes a ton of money off the purchase price of the vehicle. So I think on the 100 kilowatt hour car, it's something like 17 or 18,000 euros off the purchase price of the vehicle. And the subscription is 2,000 Norwegian NOK per month. That's about 200 euros per month. So you're looking at about $2,500 a year to rent the battery. But of course, it does include the benefit of that is battery swapping, is that your battery is down to empty and you pull in, and 3 minutes later you pull away and it's a, you know, that the battery pack that's been installed has been checked, has probably been fully charged on some nice slow charging overnight, I imagine, when the electricity was probably cheaper, that all the cells and the modules are all tip-top condition. Anything not right, they'll take it out of service, out of the fleet, and get it fixed up, so you know that you've got some great technology in your battery at all times. And lots of people in China love it, but we'll see if the concept works over here. I'm really curious to watch what Norway do. There is plenty of infrastructure in Norway. Do they need battery swapping? But, well, we'll wait and see. And talking of whether it works or not, at least in some parts of the world, on September 29th, NIO swapped a total of 504 battery swapping stations and achieved the 4 millionth battery swap. That is amazing. 4 million battery swaps by September 29th. That's about 30 swaps per user, they say. The highest number of battery swaps for a single vehicle that they've recorded so far is 927. Someone is absolutely rinsing that battery swap service. Fantastic. They want to have a total of 700 battery swapping stations before the Chinese New Year holiday in 2022, and they're at 504 now, and they just keep investing. It seems to be enormously popular in China, and people don't mind that I don't own the battery. Like, I don't own the battery of my Renault Zoe. Renault do, and I paid them 50 quid a month for the lease, and I know that if the most expensive bit in the car breaks down, not my problem, it's Renault's, right? So I got no early Leafs had battery lease. That went pretty quickly. Renault have binned it off now and, you know, have been calling me and trying to get me to buy out the lease and offering me a, what they think is an attractive figure. Nope, you're okay. Battery leasing is brilliant. Comes with free breakdown cover. So if you just run out of energy because you're a numpty and you don't charge it, Renault will come and get you. And it's Renault's problem if there's an issue. I think battery leasing is brilliant. Not everyone agrees, and not everyone gets their head around the car sitting on your driveway not being all yours. I understand that side of it as well. Let's talk about charging. The Swiss company ABB, I'm liking their stuff at the moment. It's good. And the latest EV charger is the Terra 360, T-E-R-R-A, as in terraforming, not Terra, you know, movie kind of thing. Because that would be a terrible name, right? For an electrical product that's meant to be safe. Terra! Ah! No. Anyway, moving on. That was a digression. It's 360 in the name because it is 360 kilowatts, therefore the fastest, at least non-commercial, EV charging station out there, says Future Car. Modular charger, which will do four vehicles at once, and it has power sharing as well, dynamic power distribution, so drivers haven't got to wait if somebody else is charging. You pull up, you plug in, and it manages the power amongst the vehicles plugged into it. The first chargers available in Europe by the end of this year, which is brilliant. Can't wait to see what network has bought them and where they're going to go. Not that I own a car that can make the most of it, but hey, we like new toys. Coming to the US, Latin America, Asia Pacific in 2022. We'll pop a link to a story about that in the show notes if you want to get your geek on and read about more. What about Tesla in Germany, very quickly? Well, the German state of Brandenburg saying today they've made no decision on whether Tesla can continue to operate in Berlin, and they have had some permissions granted thus far, but ultimately, you know, worst case scenario, Tesla have to pull the whole thing down and replant the trees. That obviously won't happen. There was a media report that then just, you know, the Tesla world, the world kind of went crazy with, saying that regulators had agreed on a conditional approval, says Reuters. It was a Business Insider website saying that their sources saying the authorities had agreed to give the Tesla go-ahead that they needed, contingent on some requirements like water use and prevention of accidents, etc. But when Reuters asked the officials to comment on the report, the state's environment ministry said consultations and reviews are currently ongoing, so no decision can have been made yet. It's impossible to have made a decision. They're still reviewing, and people are still, I think, the public consultation continues. So what was that report all about? Well, it said that the Tesla factory in Grünheide will receive the final approval from the state office around November sometime, as Electrive, in mid-September. The state environmental agency granted them two early approvals to do with the factory. The authority has now allowed the construction of a modified building, so they're putting the shell up for the storage and also the battery cell production going in, and some basins for rainwater and firefighting water are going in as well. But still so much work to do there, so I was having a look around, see who's been writing about this recently, because there's always kind of drone videos almost every day on YouTube if you want to watch, and they always look like it's like a muddy field, like it looks so far away from being finished. But I know that Tesla are hosting this party. They want 9,000 people there. I mean, the limit is 5,000 by the COVID rules, but they've asked for permission to have 9,000 people there. Elon Musk is going to be there. And I think lots of people assume it's going to be a Tesla delivery event, as in they're going to be, if not real customers, because you can't buy one yet, it's certainly, hey, we just made a Model Y, and here it is driving around or driving off the production line. Well, Tesla conceived the Model Y, at least the German Model Y, to be all about three main castings, mega castings. One for the entire front structure in one piece, one for the entire rear structure in one piece, and those being joined together by a structural battery pack along the middle of the car. The Cybertruck, the Roadster, they all have a similar design. Well, according to a research company called Jabberwock Research, work is in its early phases for things like hazardous materials warehouses, fire suppression systems. They've been analysing the fire stations. So far, the tanks for the wastewater are ready, but that's all, says Gus at Auto Evolution. The visitors that go along to this Tesla party next week, at what they're calling GigaFest, will certainly not find a finished factory, which I was wondering, like, oh, are they done? Like, brilliant, I'd like a Model Y, please, with 4680 cells in. But this research company, or this engineering company that's been having a look at the videos, saying that at the minute, the paint shop is looking reasonably complete, but it's probably only going to have temporary systems because the diesel generators are still in. There are 6 gigapresses thought to be in Berlin, but 2 of them are installed right now with some temporary LNG tanks mounted around them. And according to this research as well, Tesla has 6 months of work before they're anywhere near making a car. That really surprises me. I thought it was much, much closer than 6 months away. It means it'll be ready to start producing cars in April next year. The same deadline that Elon Musk, funnily enough, gave for the 4680 cells to be ready to go into production cars. Now, will they start making Model Ys for 3 or 4 months with 2170 cells being shipped in from China? Or will the first cars coming out of Berlin be made with these new Tesla cells, the 4680 cells? That would make more sense, but it seems like a really long delay. Maybe, hey, we'll wait and watch that one. I would absolutely love a Model Y. It would suit our family. It would suit us perfectly. And, you know, you want, if you're going to get one, you would want to get one with the 4680 cells, the new structural way of being built. You want the latest greatest, don't you, if you're spending that much money? So wait and see on that. Right, question of the week. We'll read out your answers on Sunday. If you've ever gone back to driving a fossil car for whatever reason, or maybe you know somebody who has, and if you haven't, then, you know, play along and imagine if you did go back to driving piston power from EV, why was that, or why would it be? And I've shared mine, probably charging infrastructure. At the minute, I'm finding too much unreliability, and it pees me off too much. And I love EVs, but I'm turning up to these companies like BP and Shell. They've got big old balance sheets, you know. If they want to do it right, they've got the money to do it, and they're not doing it. So it can't be because they haven't got the money, because they've got enough cash. There's got to be another reason why I'm turning up. And I've been putting it on, you know, my social media. When I turn up to a station, it's turned off, or my pulse card says invalid card every bloody time I use it now. And the Onto card I've got says invalid card, so it's not mine. My wife's got one. We pay them monthly. Invalid card. Like, I'll post it. I will tell them, like, my card isn't working. Like, yeah, we know. It's long. You know, they say, oh, we've got problems we're trying to sort. You've had them all year. You had them. It's ridiculous. Like, you've got the money to fix it. There's another reason why BP? And I've been turning up to Shell stations, whole units powered down. Like, these oil companies, why are they doing it, right? I don't know. They got the money to fix it. There's something else going on. So if I were to ever go back, and I won't, but if I did go back to driving a combustion car, it would be just because these companies that, you know, get a lot of headlines for spending a lot of money, but don't know how to run a charging network, at least in my opinion. And from my personal experiences, of course, there must be chargers out there working, or there'd be uproar, but I can't seem to find too many of them. That'd be my reason. What would be yours? Let me know. Hello at evnewsdaily.com. Hello at evnewsdaily.com is my email. Well, if you can ever become a patron of the show, it helps me fund this program. Check it out, patreon.com/evnewsdaily. Thanks to our premium partners, Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of the Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, National Car Charging on the US mainland, and Aloha Charge in Hawaii, Derek Riley from the EV Review Island YouTube channel, Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK, and emobilitynorway.com. Have a good one. See you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.